Bring this mic up. We got approximately 40 minutes to share something very important, very, very important. I never like to take people's time if I don't feel that I got a message to give. You've preciously taken your time so kindly to come here, so I do not want to waste your time. So the context is, of course, the spiritual master and the disciple and the relationship. So I thought to start by sharing a personal memory. Or before I say that, let me just make this point. You know, life is not measured by the number of breaths you take. Really, life is measured by moments that take your breath away. You know? It doesn't matter if I live hundreds of years, if those years are just gloomy and dark. But if I live just 10 years, 20 years, and those years are filled with abundance and beauty, it's worth living for. So the story here takes place in October 2007 in Vrindavan. So I was chanting my Gayatri to the dawn of the light of the sun. And it was such a magical setting. As this sun, which is, you know, the deity of Radha, was gradually going up in the sky. And I was sitting on the shore, just by the side of Yamuna, in the land of Radha. And Yamuna being the daughter of the sun god. So it was just so magical. So how did I find myself there? It was the first day of Kartik. And I was blessed to be in Vrindavan, to spend that month in Vrindavan. So after the Mangal Arati, I took myself down to the Yamuna to officially begin my Kartik Vrata. So I did Achaman, Argya, offered Krishna a garland of tulsi leaves. You can only do that in Vrindavan. And then I expressed my Vrata, my Sankalpa. And I said, I want to chant 64 rounds a day and to study Bhagavad Gita. And I was inspired to take this vow by my spiritual master, Ravina Suraprabhu, and by two instructions, which I received from Srila Prabhupada in my dream. And the first one was, I found myself in my dream at our temple, and I was going to my quarters on the second floor, and then suddenly, as I was going up the stairs, I saw Srila Prabhupada was chanting in the hall. And it was so real that in my dream, I thought, my God, we only thought Srila Prabhupada left. He's here. And I thought, this is such a wonderful opportunity. I'm going to ask Srila Prabhupada all our questions. And, you know, and what he says, people cannot deny. And I thought, I got to go and grab my dictaphone. And I couldn't find it. So I started walking by the side of Srila Prabhupada. And I start telling him with a heavy heart about the challenges we are facing with in our movement in Sweden. I was telling him, and he was listening, and then suddenly he stopped, and he turned around to me, and he said, with his, you know, finger pointing out from the beat bag, he said, work on yourself. You know? You know, I was telling him all the problems in our movement, and he turned around and said, you work on yourself. And the second dream I had, I was in a auditorium, we were waiting Srila Prabhupada's arrival, and Vyasasana was set up, and suddenly Srila Prabhupada came with his disciples, but before going to the Vyasasana, he came up to me and gave me the Bhagavad Gita, and he said, study this. And he went to the Vyasasana and started chanting Radha Madhava. So that's why I said, I'm going to chant 64 rounds to work on myself, and I'm going to study Bhagavad Gita. So, in my request was to have a significant spiritual experience that would make me worthy to share Mahaprabhu's message. That was my idea. Well, it didn't really turn out that way. And that's basically the topic of today's lecture. What I did find out after a month, and You know, there was this prayer, maybe you've seen it, it's really beautiful, I don't remember it. You know, it describes how I wish this and this, I pray for this and this, and then I got this and this. And then the final line says, I didn't get anything I wanted, I got everything I needed. So that was basically my experience in this. So I'm going to share that with you. And to start with, I thought to share with you one sentence, because the topic is the relationship with the spiritual master. And in this sentence, Srila Prabhupada shares the secret. So this sentence will become the focus of our study. To understand it, if we understand it, you know, something very, very significant can happen. So the sentence is, Srila Prabhupada says, that the satisfaction of the self-realized spiritual master is the secret of advancement in spiritual life. Yes, he says the satisfaction of the self-realized spiritual master is the secret of advancement in spiritual life. So we got two things here. One is spiritual advancement. What does that mean? What is that? And then the satisfaction of the spiritual master. What satisfies him? So we're going to look at this too. So Srila Prabhupada, he says that a Mahatma or a great soul develops through the association of other Mahatmas, pure devotees. And when we study Srila Prabhupada, basically he says spiritual advancement means genuine spiritual understanding. In one place he says like this, the result of Krishna consciousness is that one becomes increasingly enlightened and he enjoys life with a thrill, not only for some time, but at every moment. Remember how many moments take away your breath? That's Krishna consciousness. It can be something so amazing that every moment is magic. And Prabhupada says that comes from spiritual enlightenment. Because all the troubles and anxiety that you have is because of false beliefs, illusions. You have everything you need. The magic is always here. Now, spiritual advancement, spiritual enlightenment, we need to contrast that to false ideas about advancement, and just wanted to say a few words about that. Because often that's where I start my spiritual life. And if I can recognize it, then I can make a choice. So Srila Prabhupada says in the Bhagavad Gita 7:27, this is very important. He says, when one fully understands that material remunerations have nothing to do with spiritual improvement, one becomes a pure devotee. Yeah. You know what remuneration means? It's like when you get, you know, what's the word for it? Yeah. Remuneration is that you do a good job, you get a diploma, you get a blessing, something, you know, a reward. That's the word, reward. So he says, this is spiritual enlightenment. He says, when one fully understands that material remunerations, rewards, physical, mental, has nothing to do with spiritual improvement, one becomes a pure devotee. So let's look at some of the characteristics of us in the beginning stages of Krishna consciousness, which is where we really think that spiritual advancement is about material rewards. And this is subconscious. So that's why we need to look at it. So the first heading I wanted to look at was the habit of pride. Or maybe I should say the habit of secret pride. Because, you know, and let me say this, this is so extremely important. Anartha Nivritti, or the transition to genuine spiritual advancement, begins when I have the humility to be prepared to observe and to acknowledge my actual behavior opposed to my habitual self-image of myself. Because if I don't, you see, sincerity is the currency of advancement. I can do anything. If the sincerity is not there, it will not, as Mahaprabhu said, it will water the weeds. What does sincerity mean? Sincerity means to be real, to be authentic, to be vulnerable. Usually we hear the story that, you know, the Greeks used to have these marbles, or some people used to sell these marbles which were cracked. And they would fill it with, you know, with wax, exactly. And then people would buy and make their temples, and then the sun would come up, the wax would melt, and everybody would see it's, you know, it's false, it's cracked marble. So from there, the word kept sinicera, without wax. So that means you're doing your business honestly. You see? So one way, sincere, sinicera. So usually we think about motive, you know, that I sell to you, I give you something, and I'm not hiding, I have no, you know, false motives. But you see, it also means that you're prepared to be, show yourself with your cracks. That's sincerity. And that takes humility. And how we can develop that, that's also one of the most essential points I want to share with you. So the habit of secret pride. So this is basically an autobiography. So, but I think what's most personal is most universal. So, secret pride. To be anxious that all I do shall be esteemed and praised. And anxious that others shall realize how spiritual and devoted I am. And I have a tendency to condemn others that don't have the same devotion. Oh, they're not so sincere. I'm embarrassed to confess my failures nakedly. Rather, to my spiritual master, I tell about all that is good. And preferably in words that make it look even better. But to say, you know, I failed. And I become angry and impatient and overly sad when I fall into my faults, because I think myself as a saint already. If you're really humble and realistic, hey, you're a beginner, get real. You know, to fail is the norm. What are you getting so worked up about? But when you think you're so advanced, and then you fall, you become so impatient with yourself, which is yet another fault in me as a beginner. And okay, so we pray to Krishna to remove our anarthas, but I pray to Krishna with great yearning that he will take from me my imperfections and faults. But because I want to find myself at peace, and not to be troubled by my imperfections, and not really for Krishna's sake. If I look at my heart, please remove this anartha. Why? So that I can be a great devotee. Or is it, please remove this anartha so I can love you more? So this is the habit of secret pride. And naturally, it comes together with envy. I experience displeasure at the spiritual good of others. But when you're enlightened, you know, every soul is a medium of divine creativity. Nobody is the source of the magic, only Krishna is. So if somebody is presenting that magic of Krishna, why do I become envious? He's only the channel. Krishna is the one who's doing it. Radharani is doing it. Haladini Shakti is coming, empowering this person to do service nicely. Am I envious of Krishna? You know? And just like in an orchestra, you know, we all have our own instruments. And the director, you know, he sometimes you have to keep quiet. You know? And but the tenor says, I wanna play me, you know. You know, but when we're, you know, genuine, we know that the sum is greater than the parts. You know? So sometimes she has to play the flute, sometimes he has to play the violin. And sometimes I will play my guitar. You know? So, but when I'm silent, it's a dynamic silence because I trust fully. He will call upon me sometimes. And in that silence, I cherish the beauty which others are manifesting. You know? Another thing which is very central is how I am moved to spiritual things exercises, persons and places by the pleasure I find in them. This is a very big one. You see, the focus is on the delight and pleasure I get in spiritual things. And the mistake is that I think that my pleasure is the satisfaction and service of Krishna. Not necessarily so. Because what follows from this is that when there is no sweetness, you think you're a failure. And you become discouraged, and that's a big lie. Your emotion doesn't say anything about Krishna's presence. And rather, in the beginning of my spiritual life, because as we said, we have to see the cracks, there's a lot of disillusionments, lots of, you know, I owe up to my humility. It's painful in the beginning, but that's real advancement. You know? So, and actually, if I'm dependent on the pleasure, what happens is that no pleasure, no motive, and therefore I don't do my devotional service. But if the idea is to give Krishna pleasure, and then, you know, when he's pleased, I'm happy. It's amazing that the pursuit of happiness is a symptom of our illusion. Nobody who's enlightened searches after happiness, because you are happiness. And if you look for it, you miss it. But when I'm acting in my dharma to love Krishna, I am who I am, Sachit Ananda Vigraha. Perfect. So these were just some of the characteristics of imperfections in me as a beginner. So this is not, spiritual advancement is not about fulfilling these things. You know, material rewards. People praise me, I get sense gratification and so forth. Okay, it's not about that. It's about genuine spiritual advancement. Okay, so from this then we learn that, if spiritual advancement is about spiritual understanding, then what is the source of the spiritual master's satisfaction is the sincere desire of the disciple for spiritual understanding, as expressed in their surrender, in their service, and in their inquiries. In one place, Srila Prabhupada says, discourses in the society of devotees can take place only among those who are really anxious to be in Krishna consciousness. I'm very grateful because you are very attentive right now. But we all know it's really hard to get into it if people are not into it. And they are not, I'm not into it if I'm not motivated by my genuine desire for real Krishna consciousness. You know? And that comes from sincerity, from really seeing who I am. Because if I think I'm so high, I won't be really motivated. But if, just like His Holiness Shachinanda Maharaj was saying, you know, basically hope, you know, I see how fallen I am, how much I'm lacking, and that really makes me eager. And that was the final day realization of that Kartik Vrata. I wrote like this the last day. So the essential result, this was my conclusion, of intensified devotional practice is the initial realization of just how deep-rooted the material disease goes and how helpless and incapable I am to purify it on my own. Because that was happened when I chanted. I just saw, man, I'm really messed up. You know? So, and then the purpose of this newfound awareness is that we will learn to pray and beg ever more fervently and sincerely for the grace of the Lord and the Vaishnavas, that we will learn humility, faith, patience, hope. You see, hope is when you compare your suffering and your challenges to the infinite, immeasurable love and grace of Nityananda. That's hope. So many times Maya wants me to be dominated by my weaknesses and to give up. But hope is really comparing. Okay, I got so much problem, But Krishna has so much more grace for me. And you know, one of the qualities of Krishna is when he decides something, it will happen. You know? So Krishna has decided to bring you back home. And if you want that too, nothing can stop you. Prabhupada says in the beginning of Krishna consciousness, one is not able to fully execute all the injunctions of the Lord. But if we are not, you know, envious, resentful of the standards, and we don't give in to frustration or disappointment, then one is sure to reach the pure platform of Krishna consciousness. No doubt about it. No doubt about it. Okay. So, I think we made kind of sufficiently the point about how sincerity is the real currency of spiritual advancement. So, if I'm going to be authentic and vulnerable, what's really required was humility. Because if I am motivated by my desire for admiration, I want you to see me in a special way, that's when I start to hide. You know, I just show you my good sides. And I have my secret life. But where there is humility, you know, I can afford to be real. That's why progress in bhakti depends on progress in humility. That is the art of sadhana. That was the last line of Puri Maharaj in his book, The Art of Sadhana. I don't know if you've seen that book. It's a beautiful book. You know? So, progress in devotion depends on progress in humility. That is the art of sadhana. And you really get it. Jai Shashi Gaur Nitai Ki Jai. And it makes real sense. Makes real sense because to have this real, genuine desire for spiritual advancement comes from when I see myself for what I am, and that takes humility. Sincerity from humility. Now, here is my final amazing point. What is the foundation of humility? That's just introduction. That's not the point. If I'm going to be humble, you see in the Bhagavad Gita, in the 13th chapter, Krishna describes the 20 steps of Gyan, or general spiritual advancement. And the first one is amanitvam, or humility. The second one is sincerity. So this is Shastra. Sincerity comes from humility. But what is not discussed in there is the foundation of humility. I think it's very important to know that. Okay, that's very good. Why are you grateful? For what?
Nearly for everything.
Okay. That's very good. Basically, I love your answer. I love it. You know, when somebody starts to feel grateful, you know they are healing and they're making advancement. It's one of the surest signs, gratefulness. So, but the word I was thinking of, be with me here. I want to be sincere, I need to be humble. To be afford to be humble, to be authentic and vulnerable, I need a sense of worthiness. A sense that I have it's okay. I have a right for love, for belonging, and for joy. What's the opposite of worthiness? It's shame. Shame is the deepest cause of pride and of hiding, concealment. Because shame is the fear of disconnection. It's the fear of disconnection. And disconnection is so important because that's what we live for. It's the essence of our soul experience. It's connection. It's rasa with Krishna and with the Vaishnavas, right? I want to belong. I want to be loved. But so if I have this sense that, you know, I am worthy of love, I am worthy of relationship connection, I'm worthy of joy, I can afford to show myself. And this worthiness is unconditional. It's not I'm worthy because I'm perfect. Perfection is rather the result of shame. That's how I'm trying to cope with it. I'm trying to, because I think I'm never good enough. This is the paradox. I think I'm never good enough, so therefore I try to perfect. I mean, I think if one day I become perfect, then people will love me and they won't reject me. That's the dynamics of it. That's the dynamics of it. And the shame is the painful belief and experience that I am flawed, I'm not enough, and I'm not worthy of connection. As I am. If I show myself to you as I am, you will just snare at me and, you know, go away. Go away. You know, that's the fear of being isolated, of being shunned outside of the warmth of the group. You know? Now, here is very important. This is my point. And if we understand this, transformation can happen. We usually think that love, because really this is when I feel loved, I feel natural worthiness, you know. So we think love is constituted by the object, not by the faculty. And this was just gibberish. But you'll get what I mean. We think, you know, love is dependent on the object. You know, if the object is good, perfect, exactly as the way I esteemed and wanted it, I will love it. And that's what basically everybody in this world, including me, are going around trying to find that right person who is worthy of my friendship, who is worthy of my love. You know, isn't that what we're doing? You know? And then we give up people because, oh, you know, she's not perfect. Oh, he is so annoying. How can I love him? You know? So the idea is that love is constituted by faculty, by the quality of your heart. A heart which is healed and open loves unconditionally and loves everybody. This romantic idea about I'm going to fall in love with you, that's lust. Period. Love is for everybody. Love, you know, the way we think of it as this complete surrender of soul, you know, where the person I give my soul to defines who I am, that's only for Krishna. That's why Prabhupada said love is only for Krishna. When I say love right now, that's how that love manifests itself in relationship between one jiva and another, and that's friendship and compassion. That's all it is. And that is unconditional love. Not that, you know, I'm going to find somebody who will make me whole. Nobody will make you whole except Krishna. Mind you. And I think that's a very big realization everyone needs to have. You will not find that person. Only if that person channels Krishna's love to you. That's the spiritual master. And that's the Vaishnavas. Then they can make you whole. But to find somebody disconnected from Krishna, I'm going to find her and she will be my perfect mate and then I will become whole. That's illusion. That's nonsense. It will never happen. Rather, when I am whole and I come together with you, you are also whole, then we have a perfect relationship. You know, then I'm not motivated by my wounds and I'm blind about them. You know, I'm motivated by, you know, trying to find in you, making a God, you know, making a religion with a fallible God. You know, that's what the romantic love is. So that's why we say that love is constituted by the faculty, by the heart. If your heart and my heart is healed, I love you. I love you. And you cannot do anything which will make you, you know, unworthy of my love. I just love you. Doesn't matter. You know? So who is the one who's giving you worthiness? It's Shyam Sundar. And his heart is so healed. And he loves you unconditionally. So that's why, you know, a person who starts to understand that, he can afford to be humble. Because I'm worthy of love, belonging, and joy. And if you think, something within you says, oh, if I think I'm worthy of love, belonging, and joy, that's ego, that is the ego talking. Because when you act upon that, you create separation. You create, you become depressed. That's, if you really look at it, those people who have love in their life, joy and connection and belonging, they are those people who think they are worthy of it. Not those who think they are unworthy of it. If you think you're unworthy of it, you will never find it. Even if it comes to you, you will rationalize it. You will run away from it. One of the most amazing facts is that everybody talks about, when will somebody love me? And then when somebody really comes and loves you, you become so afraid and run away. Why? Because that real love makes you vulnerable. Real love brings you out. And if I'm not ready to show myself, I will run away. That's why when we start to make real spiritual advancement, it's painful. Because all these false beliefs has to be exposed. You know? It's a humbling experience. Krishna, when we come to Krishna, He will never say, why are you here? are you back already? when you come to Krishna, He doesn't care about what you did. He only cares that you're here now. That's what we're seeing in Krishna's receiving Gop Kumar. He was crying. He was crying. He was feeling unconscious. He was so happy, So that is Krishna's love for you and for me. And it's not conditional. It's so perfect. So we can rest gradually more and more in that love, and then we can show ourselves for who we are. I'm not perfect. Here I am with my imperfections and my faults, but I'm still loved. And another amazing thing is, admiration you can have some control over. Love you have no control over. That's why I tell myself and I share with you, give up all your, schemes for control to get people to love you. Because no matter how perfect you are, if the heart of the other person is not ready to love unconditionally, you can't make her to love you. Love is constituted by the faculty of the heart, not by the object. I can be the most amazing, wonderful person, but if you are afraid, to love, you will not love me. And the other way around, I might have so many imperfections and faults, but if I meet somebody who is able to love unconditionally, they will accept me anyway. Doesn't matter if I have faults. So what's the whole thing about this stressing about being perfect? It's complete. But admiration you can have, and admiration is a substitute for love. That's what it is. If I cannot have love, then I want admiration. If I cannot have admiration, at least hate me. The worst thing a soul can experience is complete neglect. You don't exist. And that's amazing if you understand. That's why in many relationships, people fight again and again. Because that's the only way they can have some sense of intimacy. But if we can really heal and dare to become more close, the conflicts go away. We're having conflicts because we're not able to have conflicts about the real things. And we fight about the small things, So admiration I can have some control over. I can make myself a nice presentation for 15 minutes. But love, I have no control over. So this is very important, and it will, now I'm sharing this, but hey, it's gonna take immense courage to apply it. And it takes one small step at a time. And I can share with you this final idea, that every major transformation happens one small step at a time on a daily basis. It's not true that, suddenly you change your life. It's one small step every day. I come back to it. And that, that I never give up. I have this humility, this perseverance, this patience. That's the real signs of advancement. Not the sweetness I experienced. That will come sometimes. And ultimately when I process anartha nivritti, I come to nishtha and then ruchi, and then I will always be there. But that's always in connection to Krishna's pleasure. Not what I get. Okay. So time is over. We got 5 minutes. So just you know, where we came from, I was sharing with you this idea about how the satisfaction of the self-realized spiritual master is the secret of advancement in spiritual life. You know, spiritual advancement means genuine spiritual understanding. And what makes the spiritual master happy is when he sees that in you, not, you know, this motivation for false rewards, for real rewards. You're sincere, you're humble, you're real. And now, because, you know, when Guru Hari Prabhu told me to give this lecture, he said, he shared me with his own, you know, the idea he had for the class he wanted to give, and he wanted to share how we should take note of and emulate the devotional spirit of the spiritual master. You know, you see his expressions. And to kind of tie all I said back to what Guru Hari Prabhu said, I had that verse there, which says this, and this is, we end with this. The verse itself says, so the, because the idea is, okay, how do you get all this? How do you get there? And this verse says, O twice born sages, by serving those devotees who are completely freed from all vice, great service is done. By such service, one gains affinity for hearing the messages of Vasudev. And Srila Prabhupada comments, he says, the servants of God come to propagate God consciousness, and intelligent people should cooperate with them in every respect. By serving the servant of God, one can please God more than by directly serving the Lord. The Lord is more pleased when he sees that his servants are properly respected, because such servants risk everything for the service of the Lord and so are very dear to the Lord. The Lord declares that no one is dearer to him than one who risks everything to preach his glory. And here comes the instruction, by serving the servants of the Lord, the spiritual master, one gradually gets the quality of such servants, and thus one becomes eligible to hear the glories of God. The eagerness to hear about God is the first qualification of a devotee eligible for entering the kingdom of God. So His Holiness Shachinanda Maharaj, being the spiritual father of so many of you, and my proud to having as my spiritual uncle, he's a person who treasures depth, intimacy, and beauty. You know, and he's a person who is very, always tries to be real and authentic. You know, he shared with me once that, you know, he doesn't want to close his eyes to his shadows. Of course, his humility. Because he said, I don't want at my deathbed, because at your deathbed, your shadows will come up. And if you haven't processed them, you will have to take birth again. So I'm so inspired and so honored by Maharaj's, you know, this quite, he has this quality of sincerity, you know, amazing hope, and he's so real, you know. So by serving his lotus feet, you know, we can all develop these qualities more and more, which is then the secret of satisfaction of the spiritual master and genuine advancement. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Thank you so much. My time is over. And punctually so. It's exactly 9 o'clock. So.
Yeah.
What's that?
Don't tell. Is anybody forcing you to be so sharp in time? With 20 hours. Come on.
I think I heard breakfast
and morning. We help everybody that you allow a few questions.
I would love to. I'm just following the instruction given. Here's the master of ceremonies. Okay, so please.
I didn't get the point you mentioned about Guru Maharaj and deathbed and shadows. What was the point?
You know, shadows is the things we hide, qualities, desires, motivations, which we feel, you know, if I show them, then, you know, I'm not a good person. You know, so there is this tendency to repress it. So, for example, maybe I have lust or desire for fame, you know, and I repress it. I'm not sincere about it. So if I do that, I repress it my whole life, and I do, you know, my devotional service. And remember, I said sincerity is the currency of advancement. So I'm not doing real work in my heart. So he said that danger is if that's the mode of my service, and then death comes. The nature of death is that it brings up the unconscious. So if the, all that was unprocessed, there will come up. And then it's in my consciousness, all this lust, all this desire for pride, and what happens, I have to take birth again. I won't go back home, back to Godhead. So that's why he said he wants to be very real about whatever is in his heart and bring it before Lord Nityananda so that he will be purified like that. So he can, you know, go back home, back to Godhead. Right.
So how do you deal with this? Because your spiritual master has spoken also a lot about
sure.
In this connection. Maybe you can tell a few words because one cannot be loved. As you were telling that one has a feeling that he will be rejected.
Right.
He's sincere. But then there is a dilemma: should I be honest sinner or false saint? So how does it go along?
Honest sinner. You see, every saint has a past and every sinner has a future. You always remember that. And we see every, you know, big saints, they had a past. One of my favorite stories is the story of Prahlad Maharaj. It's in the Puranas. He was this attached materialist and he was one day he had his girl in his life and was fighting all the time. One day they fought and quarreled from the early morning to the, you know, to evening, and they were fighting the whole day, so they didn't stop to eat anything, and that day happened to be Kadashi, and that was his first Sukriti. And then, you know, and then that's the guy who became Prahlad Maharaj. Like, what happened? You know, so every saint has a past. And every sinner has a future. So, and so many times we wait for other people to give us, you know, permission. Oh, Prabhu, I love you unconditionally, so now be real. And it's wonderful if that's their examples like that, but if I'm going to wait for that, maybe it won't happen. I need to give that to myself. I need to understand it, that the most important relationship is Guru and Krishna. You know? And with there I can begin, and I can be the change I want in the community. You know? It's very important. So naturally what happens when I do my spiritual sadhana and especially chanting with you know, attention, that brings up the unconscious. You know? It's a good point to know. When you're doing real service, and that was my realization in the Kartik Brata, things come up. All these desires come up. So what you need to do, you need to allow yourself to acknowledge it, you see it, and then you let it go and you wave goodbye. That's what it means. And sometimes when it's emotional, you know, you can actually process traumas in your spiritual, you know, process. Because these things need to be. What's trauma? It means a pain that you didn't process, you didn't allow yourself to feel. So sometimes in your chanting, grief can come up. And you just have to shed those tears and feel and let it go. That's just the way it is. You know. It's very nice. I used to think that there are five levels of silence. The first level is the style of speech. You know, I don't talk nonsense. Second level is my mind. Usually it goes, you know, keep quiet. Third level is the level of will. I'm not acting, I want this, I don't like this, I want this, I don't like this. So much of our mental chatter is about that. I don't like this, I don't like this, I don't like this, I don't like this. Shut up! Whatever Krishna wants. You know, that's perfect. And then the fourth level is the silence of the unconscious. When you have processed your unconscious so that no more nonsense comes up. You know, you just silence. And the final level of silence is the silence of being. That's samadhi. Where you're just so absorbed in the object of your love that you're barely aware of your own existence. You're just Krishna. And that's all. Thank you. Any other thing? Thank you.
Especially the point where you said that Krishna has decided to take us back.
Right.
And if we have the desire, nothing stands in
it. Nothing.
It gives so much hope, you know, because it's just a question of time.
Time, exactly.
It needs patience.
Exactly.
And the other thing I wanted to ask, it's obvious that this verse, the feeling of not being worthy is all around, you know.
So yeah.
To realize that Krishna loves us and therefore we are worthy, it's not so easy to realize. I mean, the head is there, but the real realization is different.
Right.
What can you say, what can be helpful?
I can share with you my experience. My experience was, here I was, you know, devotee, everybody's praising. He's such a nice devotee, that Ratna Bhushana, you know. You know, he took devotion service on so early, you know, it's easy for him, you know. But as I said, I had my secret life, my doubts. I felt I was bad, you know. That was what I felt, I'm bad, I'm not worthy. So, and as you said, you know, in my head, I knew, you know, yeah, Krishna loves me, you know. But actually, my inner convictions even befuddled those principles. So when I really embraced what I felt about myself, how unworthy I felt, and in that moment of emotional experience of my vulnerability, you know, and that's when I opened myself in terms of faith, of openness of heart, that, you know, Krishna loves me. Somehow when I was vulnerable, that made more sense. I don't know how else to explain it. It's like, if you haven't touched your vulnerable point, you're still having your shadow, you talk about Krishna loves me, it's not real. It's just theoretical. But if I can be real with Krishna, here I am, what I feel, you know. And that's actually what happens in a therapeutic relationship. When you're in a, it can be, you know, official with a healer, or it can be a really good friend or spiritual master. When you allow yourself to be vulnerable in their presence, you're real. Everything's on the table. And in that moment, you have the experience that person still accepts you. That's when you start to heal. You know. So if you can't do that with Krishna, it's great. But maybe I'm not advanced enough, so I need to do that with people who represent Krishna, who are more tangible to me. Yeah. Yes. Thank you. Right, right.
And I really want to start at myself to really see everyone as lovable, whatever he shows
right.
from outside. Maybe he looks like crazy.
Right.
He looks like crazy, but
exactly. That's the best thing, to be the change, to start. Compassion means compassion with, it's like, co-suffering, that's what compassion, passion, suffering, that's the word. Passion means suffering in Latin, you know. So compassion means to suffer with another person. And you cannot suffer with another person if you haven't suffered your own suffering. That's the source of compassion. I've felt my own suffering and I've been empathic with myself. You know, when I have that experience and then when I see you, you know, maybe your challenge might be different. You know, but I know what it means to have a broken heart. I know what it means to feel lonely. You know, and that's what I'm understanding you. You know, and that's where I can, you know, be compassionate. Maybe your challenge is different, but I know the core experience is the same. You know, and I compare from my own experience, and I know, you know, you can be as sincere as you want, but the things take time. You know. People who hurt are hurting. People who are outside hurting other people are the people who are hurting inside. You know, so I need to start with myself. Yeah.
It's a brilliant class. Really.
Thank you.
Embarrassed, my first emotion, all that was envy. Why do I not contain such wonderful things? But,
right.
But I'm very grateful to get to hear it and very hopeful. So I like very much it's the challenge is now applying it and in a
right.
sense. Like, is there any questions? Like, well, I don't know. I'll tell you in a
right. Right. I'll get back to you, mate.
But just to all the points that different people made. If I could just share one thing.
Mm.
That, very manifest, you
very expertly demonstrated. Srila Prabhupada describes in the, well, Srila Rupa Goswami presents these six types of loving exchanges in the Nectar of Instruction.
Right.
And in the purport, which are, you know, to give in charity, receive in charity, reveal one's mind and confidence, inquire confidentially, and accept prasad in the proper prasad.
Right.
In the purport, Srila Prabhupada describes that this international society for Krishna consciousness has been established to facilitate these six types of loving exchanges.
Right.
In terms of to your, like, ISKCON, what ISKCON is about, according to Srila Prabhupada, is to experience exactly this, what we're experiencing right now.
Right.
And says it's the life of the Krishna consciousness.
Exactly.
And that everyone must be given a chance to associate with us and, of course, the more advanced devotees.
Sure.
He says that the natural outcome is that one's dormant, any man's dormant Krishna consciousness will automatically be reawakened.
Right. Exactly.
And this is the greatest preaching, is to really have this type of atmosphere what we're experiencing right now. Any person coming into this.
Exactly.
I want to join.
Right. I'm in. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank
you so much. Thank you. It's amazing. You know, we're all searching for the sense of belonging. You know, the movement we want to, the group, the loving group we want to be. It's not our perfection that unites us. It's our vulnerability. You know, that's our weaknesses which unites us. You know, it's an amazing thing, you know. So, wow. And when you were talking about this, you know, Krishna, you know, he wants us back, and if I want back, it's just a question of time. I remember a story I would like to share with you. And once the Lord appeared to a person, he said, I have an assignment for you. He said, outside your house is a big rock, and I want you to push against it with all your might every day. So the person accepted, and every day from sunrise to sunset, he would push against this immense rock with all his might, and it didn't budge. You know, he was, you know, working so hard, and it's not even moving. You know? So after, you know, some time, he started to doubt. You know, this is wasted. You know? So he thought about, you know, giving up. But he said, I'm going to bring it up in prayer before I, you know, decide something. So he started telling the Lord, you know, you told me to, you know, push against this rock, and I'm doing it, and nothing is happening, you know. So what's the use? And then the Lord spoke to him, and he said, you've done what I told you. I told you, you know, push against the rock. I never told you to move the rock. I told you to push against the rock. And you see, in the process of pushing against this rock, you've become strong. And he said, not because you did your part of the deal, now I will move the rock. And that's basically all it is. You know, the time for me, it is impossible. It's impossible. I cannot change the terrible thing which I've created when I left Krishna. It's just crazy. Anybody who starts to fight with these things, you know, that's when we realize, my God. It's like, I'm trying to crack Mount Sumer with my head. You know, doesn't work. But if I show this perseverance, you know, this Prabhupada love to give the example of the sparrow. Wants to empty the ocean, it's impossible. But because he's so sincere, then Garuda comes. And then he can do it. And that's what it is. And when Krishna sees that, you know, Krishna, I'm ready to work on this even millions of lifetimes. Because you're worthy of it. And when he sees that, he makes it just one lifetime. That's the secret. And he starts to remove all the blocks from your heart. You know, the blocks are only there to show, to encourage our sincerity. That's all. It's not like Krishna wants to discourage us. He just wants us to surrender completely upon his mercy. That's all. That's all. Any last thing? Yes.
Right.
is always step by step.
Right, right.
Why do we want to do it? Because one obvious thing you elaborated on is that we want to be perfect.
Right.
And another thing is we want this basically instantly.
Right.
By the way,
exactly.
Why do we want that?
Because we are motivated by the desire to be loved. To be able to be joyful and happy and to have belonging. These are soul needs which are so powerful, you can't really procrastinate it. You know, it's like either die or live. That's, you know, when we don't have the sense of connection, you know, that's when we experience a break, you know. Shattering. You know, in terms of developmental psychology, it's like when a child comes to this world, he's completely open and vulnerable, you know? There are no defenses, no schemes, nothing. And then usually because the parents are so wounded and so into their ego personality, you know, they hurt the child. And when you're really vulnerable, it really feels painful, you know? So then you close up and, you know, you develop personality, to become perfect in a special way, to be loved, you know. So my understanding is that, you know, because, you know, I'm motivated by, it's like, it's almost like a sense of survival, you know. So, you know, I'm out of breath. I want the next breath right now, not next week, because by then I'm not here anymore. So in the same way, you know, when I'm thinking I'm not loved, I cannot have the sense, the experience, then I want to be perfect as soon as possible so that I can be loved. You know? Okay. And I just share with this final thing. I mean, for me it's... Did I say that before? I haven't noticed. You know, when Guru Hari Prabhu came and told me, you know, could you give this lecture? And, you know, what I always do is like, you know, I didn't know what to say, what to do. You know, it's always like, I come there with a blank sheet. And then, you know, I try to empty myself and, you know, and just see what needs to be said. And then from one thing another. And this for me is one of the strongest source of my faith. That a person was completely confused, doesn't know anything. You know? And then from one inspiration, another inspiration, things come and then there is a picture. And that's, you know, the inspiration. I didn't create it. I'm as much a listener here as I'm telling you. This is my journey. You know, so it's so beautiful, and I think so, and every one of us has that. That's the amazing thing. That's why I'm so, one of the greatest, you know, anticipations I have is to see what is your gift. You have a gift, which only you have. You can channel Krishna's creativity, which is unique. So never compare yourself to another person. You're a unique flower. And then the way Krishna comes through you, we wouldn't have any way of experiencing that except from you. You know? So if there's something good which some other devotee has, let that just encourage you to find your gift, because you have it. You know, and then when we have it, we feel so perfect being, you know, just an instrument. So now I'm gonna be silent. Till next time. Thank you so much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Samaveta Bhaktivrinda ki jai.